views expressed on the following program of those of its hosts and participants and no way reflect those of the staff or management of WNRI.
The time for empty talk is over. Now arrives the hour of action.
It's time for the John DePietro Show on News Talk, WNRI, 1380 AM and 95.1 FM.
He's a special kind of sentinel.
Mr. DePietro, who is in the eye of the storm.
Suddenly, John DePietro became the story.
Radio talk show host, John DePietro.
All right, folks, good afternoon. Welcome to the Power Hour. John DePietro, this is the John DePietro Show. Weekdays, we start at 11, we go right until 2 o'clock. And this portion of the program is brought to you by our friends at JKL Engineering. Folks, the heating season is here right now. Now, if you're having a problem, or maybe you want to reduce your oil bill by as much as 90%, call JKL Engineering right now. Estimates are free and financing is available for both residential and commercial. Call JKL Engineering at 401-351-7600, 401-351-7600, JKL Engineering, licensed in Rhode Island and Massachusetts. Well, it's Political Monday, and let's bring him on. He's the managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com, and it's our friend Justin Katz. Good afternoon, Justin.
Good afternoon, John.
Justin, I'd like to start off. There was quite a scene last week where you had Speaker Mattiello did survive his election challenge against Republican Steve Frias. So the people in his district, I think that's the last time we're going to see Steve Frias run, but we don't know. But he did survive. And leading up to his election, there was a lot of progressives that started to speak out, say that they would not support him for Speaker again. And so would he normally, they have their caucus, and he had his caucus where he brings in all the Dems, and they met this time Chapel Grill in Cranston for a caucus to elect him the new leader. But this time it was a little bit different, and there were protesters outside, and they had what they're calling the group of 21, that various different progressives that announced that they are not going to be supporting him. There were protesters. They had a little bit of a mini kind of impromptu press conference outside, and they talked about the many reasons they're not going to be supporting him. But the bottom line is, and this is what people need to understand, the whole element of power in Rhode Island is if you want to be the Speaker in the House, Speaker of the House, I should say, which is the most powerful position in the state, what you basically need to do is convince 38 of your fellow reps to stand by you. And as much as you have to worry about your district, it really just becomes a numbers game. We'll go up to 40 just to make sure it's safe. But it really comes down to, if you can keep those 38 to 40 Democrat reps happy, it doesn't have to be Democrat reps, but traditionally it is, and get their votes for Speaker, then that's really all you have to worry about. And what does that come down to? That comes down to, you know, I remember when they went through you know, different speakers, and they're always, so they have their list of who they want to keep in line. Now, they have been successful getting the votes and the budgets are passing unanimously, and but, you know, they give them tickets to different sporting events. They put them on committees. They donate to their campaigns. They give them legislative grants. It really becomes the inside sell where they, if you're the Speaker in Rhode Island, the way it's set up, which I believe is it's flawed the way it's set up. It needs to be adjusted. It was set up many, many years ago. I believe it becomes the root cause of one of the reasons why we have so many problems in the state, because it's unchecked power. I do believe I'd rather have the governor have more power, because at least the governor could be held accountable. You and I, we have no bearing on who votes for the Speaker. The rep that I used to have, Representative Anthony Giarrusso, he would not vote for Mattiello. He didn't caucus with him, so he had no bearing on it. And then even my new rep, Justine Caldwell, who's a big progressive, she didn't vote for him. So you have one person who holds all this power in the form of a dictatorship, but they're held unaccountable by the voters. And therefore, as much as some people say, well, you don't want to see the governor get more power, actually, I do want to see the governor get power, because if you have a scenario, which we have in Rhode Island, a lot of people don't realize it, and that is it's power without accountability. So they can do whatever really the hell they want and make all these changes and run their system, and they're never held accountable. That's just a recipe for disaster. And I believe that is the reason why, you know, people get frustrated and don't understand why the state can't get out of its own way. So I want to hear your thoughts on the progressive protest. How Mattiello continues to portray himself as I am the firewall between the progressive nuts taking over. And maybe he has a point that he is. But just, you know, he, in the end, he had the votes. He won. And he is not going to reward them in any way. In the past, he has been very, very vindictive and does not hesitate to show his power, flex his muscles, and toss people aside as heads of committee if they don't go along the way he wants them to go along.
Well, yeah, there's a lot there. So first, to me, the biggest problem, or the thing that most needs to be said about the power that the speaker has, is he wouldn't have it if the other reps didn't give it to him. So there was a push before the election, you know, people saying to get their reps to pledge not to support him, sort of like nationally get Democrat reps pledging not to support Nancy Pelosi. That goes to some extent, but really we need to start pushing our representatives to represent our interest. And we can do that, you know, without getting into party or ideology. That should be just a big push, as Representative Jared Nunes tried to do some of that with changing the rules. That ultimately is what can hold the speaker accountable, if the representatives stop playing this game. You get the sense a lot of them really kind of like this idea. So you get the progressives complaining that their issues aren't coming to the table, coming up for a vote. But a lot of that is because the other reps don't want to vote on it because they're going to have to vote against it, and then they'll be subject to attack from the progressives. So to some extent, Mattiello's comment about being the firewall against the progressives applies to the other reps, where he's the firewall that keeps them from having to proclaim on particular issues in a way that could be problematic for them. So the first thing is for us to hold our own representatives accountable and make sure they're representing us and not representing the government to us. But we've discussed this a bit, and I think disagreed to some extent. There is something to be said for Mattiello's being the firewall. And one thing I find very two interesting things about this whole thing. First, nobody stepped up to run against him. So you had this group of 21 who perhaps safety in numbers figured they could vote against him, and some of them could cut special deals and say, hey, look, I had to do that. I see Almeida's in the paper saying, oh, I'm not, don't group me with the progressive people. I just didn't like some of his decisions about diversity. So I'm still on board with the speaker. I just had to express that disapproval. So they bought themselves that kind of distance, and nobody actually ran against him. But a lot of his, it was after the election that we really started hearing this, you know, I am the firewall talk. And I wonder if we'll start to see more of that among moderate and conservative Democrats, because they're seeing that the progressives are a threat, and nobody believes that they don't, in principle, like the idea of a dictator speaker. The second they have critical mass, they'll amp up the dictatorship by multiples, and everybody knows that. So I wonder if we'll start to see, now that Mattiello is secure and perhaps leading over into the Senate with Ruggiero, a little bit more of a pushback and a realization that it's getting dangerous to play along with the progressives, because they bring in a lot of national money and they've got a lot of enthusiastic grassroots support. So that might be the thing to watch over the next session.
You know what, also, you raise a very, very good point about Almeida, because what happens normally here is, and a lot of times people wonder, will the number of 21 get bigger, or will that shrink? A lot of times people come out, and as much as the progressives feel, or Governor Raimondo might feel, okay, what I need to do, because she'd like to get rid of Mattiello is, as speaker, is bump that 21, try to lure some of the people that are with him more towards, get that number up closer to 25 or 26. But it's my understanding that actually the opposite happens, where once people realize they're not going to have enough votes to knock him out, they start to peel away and they start to fall in line with him. So I think that is, now it's really January when this is going to count. So you do have, over the course of the holidays, Mattiello has the opportunity to keep his base strong of supporters, which I believe it's 44 to 21, and try to increase that, right? He wants to get that up to 50 to start to really keep it strong. So 44 to 21, they fall short. If they could get him to 37, suddenly now someone else could be the speaker because you need the 38. So they need to try to pry away. Governor Raimondo, working with the progressives, need to try to pry away seven potential people to jump off his ship and jump on with them, and then you'd have a real fight. But from what I understand, I'd like your perspective, what you hear, it's just the opposite that happens, and that is that some of the people that initially came on board, that they start to fall in line and then go along with them.
Right, and that's part of what makes it so conspicuous that nobody else came forward. I mean, you can start to peel off if somebody else is saying, I'll take them on, I'll be the one asking for your vote for speaker. Then you can rally, you can look for constituents, but at this moment, it's really just you're asking people to step up and put a spotlight on themselves and any agenda they might have as legislators and to offer essentially a symbolic vote. You can't just vote no on speaker. I mean, I guess ultimately they could and just not have one. That'd be an interesting outcome. But you need an alternative. And so far, nobody's willing to step up and be that alternative. And I think that speaks to the complicated place that a lot of the more moderate and conservative Democrats are in. Because they're establishment. Let's get ideology out of it and just focus on corruption. I mean, they like the system as it is. They benefit from it. But here you have, you know, progressive billionaires across the country and all the money down below billionaire status flowing to progressives because that's how they want to control states. And it's a pretty explicit strategy at this point. You've got them combined with the people who are really, you know, the radicals fresh out of college, most of them who are not going to take no for an answer and are just going to be, they want fiery progressive leadership. And those two combined put the establishment Democrats in a really tough place. And so I'm wondering if this election, a lot of the lesson the establishment Democrats learned was watching somebody like Regenberg or Tansy or Walsh and this last-minute letter reveal about Keeble that knocked Keeble probably out of office and threw some tar on the speaker as well with the accusations of sexual harassment. That's what's out there, and they're having to reevaluate their calculation. Before, it was always let's give the progressives something, see if we can pull them into our fold, and that's worked with some of them, like Blaise Juski. But this a newer generation of progressives just doesn't want to play nice like that. And however much they say, you know, we just want to vote, it's pretty clear once they're in a critical mass, that's it, the game is over,
right,
for the establishment Democrats. And so I think that's why you're not seeing an alternative person pop up, because it is within the Democrat Party, I think, becoming a pick your side moment, and nobody's willing to pick that side yet.
I think you're right. And as I look at this list of the 21, although there are a few men on the list, John Lombardi from Providence, Jason Knight, East Bay, Ray Hull, Providence Police Officer, Art Handy, which amazes me, still very, very liberal from the Edgewood section of Cranston, and Joe Almeida of Providence. None, the women of the group, of the 21, which, so that's what, five men, basically. One, two, three, four, yeah, five men, so of the 21, so then it's 16 women. There's no way, to me, the 16 women would ever support any one of these men being the speaker. They're glad to have them along as dissidents, but it is kind of a hodgepodge where they all kind of jump in, as you said, Almeida, saying, don't lump me in with all these, you know, progressives, because it's not like, there's no way that Teresa Tansy, Maura Walsh, Deborah Giro are saying, yeah, John Lombardi should in fact be the speaker. They'll, at this point, take any dissident they can get. But we're going to, you know, this is a game of counting votes. And Mattiello, I'll give him that. He's very shrewd. And he certainly has been successful with that I am the firewall to protect against this. But there's also a part about this, Justin. And again, folks, good afternoon. It's John DePietro. It's Political Monday. We'll speak with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. There is an element of this that I do kind of like, because I think sometimes there's no discussion up there. And the dictatorship thing, it is real. And it is an element of, if you speak out, you're punished. If you don't go along, you're punished. There are people that don't get their voices heard, and things are not debated, because it all just starts to become that they all just follow along, and they're so afraid of repercussions that it's really not a democracy. It's a group of people that just vote along the any way that he wants, because they're so afraid that there's going to be consequences if they don't support him. So I like the idea. And again, I certainly don't support any of the ideals of the progressives. I think they are dangerous. I think they are socialists. I think they are leading the path in the country down towards destruction. Their ideas fundamentally don't make sense. They are for raising taxes. None of the things that Ruggenberg were in favor of in the real world make sense. They're anti-business. They don't care about business. And you can't even have a discussion with them. You know, I was talking with someone about this over the weekend. The progressives do, what's interesting about them, Justin, I want your thought, is they like to put out, to me, kind of the puppet front people. And I'll give an example of, you know, that Alexandra Cortez, you know, who, the big story was she's a bartender, and there she is, and we're bilingual and work in the circuit. Then you find out, actually, she went to a decent school. Her family moved to the suburbs. That Maura Walsh, you know, they love the fact that she's a single mother, single unwed mother. She was a waitress, didn't go to college, ran for office. But anytime she was ever dealing with the media, they would sit her down and give her the talking points to stay on. The progressives have highly educated people in the background, but they put in the foreground, they kind of, for lack, but they use, and Tansy's another one. Tansy has no education. Tansy initially listed, Teresa Tansy, that she went to Brown University. It turned out she went to three different junior colleges three different junior colleges in New Jersey. Yeah, junior colleges in New Jersey. And then she took a course at Brown University. She's not a Brown grad. But when it would come time for her to address the media, it's kind of like the Wizard of Oz. Behind the curtain, the highly educated progressives, primarily women, they write up their talking points for them. But they push out, it's the Maura Walshes that they use as kind of, see, our movement is like everybody, and it's waitresses and working moms and people that are poor. And Cortez is saying she can't afford an apartment in D.C. and wants her pay ahead of time. But the real power base who's dictating all this are actually very intelligent, sophisticated individuals.
Right, and very well coordinated people. If we looked in the Center for Freedom and Prosperity back when UHIP was still just a gleam in Chafee's eye, I guess, we looked into the national effort to get these sorts of programs implemented, and it is a very coordinated effort with a lot of money behind it. It's very ideological, and so it filters down. And but what the people who are pushing this stuff know is that it's very unpopular if you explain it to people as it's actually conceived. And that's why you get these progressives out there who sound almost, as we discussed I think last week, who sound almost conservative when they're out there campaigning, I'm for small business, et cetera, et cetera. But they end up with these candidates who can't explain what's going on behind the scenes, probably most in a lot of places because they're acting on emotion and they don't have an explanation, but also because they're trying to hide it behind careful talking points. Don't step on this third rail, because then they'll know you're after whatever, you know, single-payer health care, taking away guns, name your poison. And that puts them in a very difficult spot. And I think that's why you see this effort to really control what they say. And I think part of the reason is because the people behind the scenes have to stay there. They've got a network of funding and a network of activists. And once you start putting those people in office and getting the transparency that necessarily goes along with that, that could be that could be disruptive. And the closest I think we've gotten to anybody like that actually getting office is probably Sam Bell in the Senate.
Yes.
Because he's a behind-the-scenes progressive type who'll sit down and discuss his views with you. And we'll see how that goes for him as he moves forward and whether it kind of teaches the public what progressives are all about. But there is that huge disconnect. And I think it's mostly because it's the behind-the-scenes organizing, but also because the ideas are just so terrible and plainly terrible that you either get people who are so, they think they're so smart that they put people off, or they can't explain it because they don't really understand it themselves and they're acting on emotion.
Right. And I think, again, folks, good afternoon on this Monday. It's Sean DePietro's Political Monday. We're speaking with Justin Katz, managing editor for OceanStateCurrent.com. You know, Justin, but they are, and you actually hit on it, they're very well schooled. They go through training sessions. I know of someone that had told me that some of the Democrats and the progressives, when they attend these training sessions, they even teach them, show up at someone's door when you're campaigning with cookies. Come off as there are certain topics to avoid. Like, I noticed that repeatedly they won't engage with issues that even if they believe in them, they don't want to tip the hand that they know could be divisive to their disadvantage. And to me, a perfect example of is if you take Nelly Gorbea or David Cicilline or Alorza or Seth Magaziner or some of the other Democrats and ask them about open borders or illegal immigration, I can write out for you, Justin, exactly what they're going to say, which is going to be, I think it's a complicated issue. I think it's a national issue. I think, you know, we're a melting pot. I think we're diverse. They'll never answer. During the course of the Secretary of State campaign, Nelly Gorbea, the Secretary of State, would never answer the question about what do you think about Mayor Alorza runs a sanctuary city? Do you think illegals should vote? Do you think they should get a driver's license? They refuse to answer the question. And they stay in mediums where they're not forced to answer the question because they'd rather just not come out about it. And the other thing that I also noticed, Justin, is people portray, you know, the Republican Party used to be seen as kind of the angry, mean party, angry of old white men, angry white males. You had Donald Trump, of course, they're always saying that. But to me, the most viciousness of late is really on the other side. And you saw it with the Kavanaugh hearings, where they I don't care what anyone says, they knew that woman was not fully there, that Christine Blasey Ford that couldn't remember, you know, I don't remember. When did you take the polygraph? I don't know. Who paid for it? I don't know. Did you know that we could have gone out there? And no, I didn't, you know, that the other two totally were like basically fabricated. That last one that NBC News ran with Kate Snow was completely ridiculous. But you also saw it over the course of the weekend where they put the video, the address of Tucker Carlson's name out there, and a bunch of, that whole Maxine Waters, go after them and shame them. And more on Twitter, I'm seeing that people that work at Fox are high-profile Republicans. Ted Cruz chased out of a restaurant. Mitch McConnell and his wife attacked by people trying to do something simple. But again, Tucker Carlson, them going to the house. And then there was another incident that just came out where Tucker Carlson was out to dinner with his daughter and his son, and someone said something very vulgar to his daughter at the bar. To them, it is the complete ends justify the means. That to them, no matter what happens, they don't care whether it's unfair, unbecoming, not true, mean. I think with that writer for Stephen Colbert, when she posted afterwards, hey, at the very least, at least we got to ruin the guy's life. I think, to me, the real nastiness, meanness is on that Democrat side. They are completely silent on any incident of something like that happens. And they don't care. They completely, they are so in the right, or the feeling that they're in the right, that no matter what happens with the other side, they feel the ultimate, the ends justify the means.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why it's in a way darkly hilarious when they complain about a dictatorship, because they really don't think that the other side points are legitimate, or that they're even legitimately human if they disagree. I mean, think of the only real political violence we've seen at a high-profile level so far was the shooting up of a congressional GOP baseball practice.
Yes.
That left Steve Scalise almost dead. So that's where the violence is. And yet, you know, you almost, I bet most people, I can't even name the guy's name, the shooter. It's been memory hold. So that's what happens. That's where the viciousness comes. And this comes from a long period of indoctrination in the school system and in college, especially, where you just, some things you're just not allowed to say. And every conservative ever is a Nazi. You know, they said it about Reagan, W. Bush, Romney. Was presented that way. So when you ramp that up, you can't expect that people aren't going to take it seriously and think and feel, because the progressives are really stoking this feeling of people that want to do good, and they want to be, we've got 100 years of movies of the you know, the hard scrabble guy who's standing up for what's right, and they've invested in that narrative, and you need a villain. And so they create these villains. That's, I mean, to be frank about it, that's you and me. And then they go after them. And sometimes people are going to go too far. And they don't then have a searching of conscience. They then say, well, this is working. Let's keep this up so people don't get involved and don't oppose us. But yeah, Tucker Carlson's been getting a big brunt of this, and there really ought to be more attention paid to that kind of thing in the public conversation, and we just don't have it.
You also saw it, I think, really locally in East Greenwich, where you had a council that were trying to rein in. There was fraud taking place, and there were side deals set up, and they were starting to uncover basically outright fraud that was under existence. But instead, the other side, the unions, flipped it, and you had this mass, you know, coming into the council meetings, and, you know, you and I have talked about it, move the meeting, and I can't hear you, and all out-of-towners, and literally people coming in by bus and causing a disruption and screaming and yelling and creating chaos. In the end, the council wasn't wrong. They did uncover fraud. There was massive fraud, and still is, within the fire department, and how overtime was being awarded, and different side deals that were set up. But the whole issue got clouded, and although the Republican town council, and then they came up with, flip the council, and we're going to get rid of them, and they're turning this whole thing. What it really came down to was they lost the PR battle. Because as Channel 10 and 12 and the Journal would show up, and this packed crowd, and then outside, the union people go right up to the microphones, you want to talk about me? None of them were town residents. They were all bussed in. A lot of them actually either firefighters from other communities or other supporters of that. And this is terrible, and I've never seen the meetings this way, and blah, blah, blah. And this whole, in the end, everything they were saying proved to be right. Actually, it was even worse than they thought. But they lost the PR battle because of the way the other side was so organized, of the bussing the people in and the screaming and, you know, I can't hear you, and move the meeting and move it to a larger venue and screaming down and just complete disruption. They are professional agitators. They live for that. They're well organized. It's planned. It's not by accident, but it is amazing, Justin, how the media just kind of plays along. Like, because I would watch Channel 12. A group of residents East Greenwich came out last night and were upset at the way things being handled. And I would see the footage, and I could pick out none of them were residents of the town. They were all union organizers from outside that came in to disrupt, you know, that particular town meeting.
Right, and this is especially at the local level where people just want their nice, quiet community. It's a very effective strategy on the left. Is they, whenever there's some legitimate disagreement within government, they make it seem like there's this huge outcry, everything's in turmoil, the local politics is out of control, it's just craziness, it shouldn't be this way in our quiet community, and the voters tend to just say, you know what, let's go back to some peace and quiet here, and often don't correctly assess which side is causing the disruption and the agitation, and that's a big problem that especially Republicans in Rhode Island are going to have to overcome, because if you're going to be, as we found with East Greenwich, if you're going to be the one standing up for for some change in government, you're going to be the target, and they're going to come in and do everything they can to disrupt your meetings, and it's going to be very, very difficult to find people who are motivated to sit on these boards and reasonably sit there and take this and still move forward a more conservative agenda, because a large part of it is the conservative side doesn't have any. We're not in it to give stuff away or to get jobs for our friends. So at some point, people say, you know what, it's not worth it for me to spend every other Monday or whatever it might be sitting on this board getting screamed at by out-of-state union hacks.
Yes.
And then be made a villain in my own community so they can take back the council and go back to business as usual. It's going to be, that's probably the key challenge, and it gets worse and worse every time somebody decides that Rhode Island's too crazy to live in and moves out of state.
Before I let you go, your thoughts on future of the Republican Party. It's interesting. I did see someone sent me a quote of some person that's run for office. I don't have it in front of me, but basically saying part of the problem is the party just doesn't have strength. I know for a fact that a number of people that normally would play predominant roles, maybe in the Republican Party, there's retribution in this state. If you're a business owner and you donate to the party, or you donate to Mayor Fung over Governor Raimondo, what have you, there's going to be repercussions. Make no mistake about it. And you even saw in Warwick, Ken Block, you know, he filed that report about the firefighters and the scam they're running with the overtime, and all of a sudden, boom, there's an emergency inspection of his business, and they've right. I mean, it's so blatant, it's almost frightening. But they were basically saying part of the problem is not only do you have a lack of the party, and a lot of people that do well, then, you know, they then move to Florida and they don't want to have to give up the money. But you have a number of people that they're almost contrarians, and they'd rather just be unsuccessful with the party as long as they have their little power base, as trying to, instead of really starting to expand it. I mean, you go back to, well, about 10 years ago, maybe actually a little bit more than that, a little more than 10 years ago, but you had Mayor Abadesian was the mayor of Warwick. Mayor Laffey was an up-and-comer in the mayor of Cranston. You had Governor Kachiri, a Republican governor. You had some semblance of people that were, you know, kind of on the uptick. But right now, it is, I never remember seeing it as decimated as right now. And if anything, the real infighting is just within the, quote, traditional Democrat Party and the progressives. I mean, it is becoming so cemented that it would, I don't know what the next step is. And when you, I think the real damage of this last election cycle was not that Mayor Fung lost, but it was that two high profile, for better or worse, Republicans took sides against him. And whether, you know, and then Trillo even openly saying, as long as Raimondo wins, I'll be happy. That with Morgan and Trillo, that to me was far more damaging of the Fung loss. Because I think I had mentioned, as someone that I know who is a Republican, be a great candidate, certainly has the ability, has money, raise money. When they looked at that and then said, do I really want to be part of that, where then these people with other agendas start coming out of the woodwork? And it does make news, because let's face it, even though Trillo was an independent, a big part of the headline was the Republican Party can't get out of their own way, and the circular firing squad, and all this internal squabbles, and that really wasn't the case. Trillo left the party, so it was really an independent former member. And then Morgan just, you know, to the end had that, I don't know how you describe it, delusional of, you know, I still feel he's the best and that's why he's going to win, and then the next day he pulls 4%. I think that did far more damage than if they just said, we're not going to help him, and quietly sat on the sideline.
Yeah, probably. The one thing that we have to remember, though, is this: we're going on, realistically, 2 decades of a sort of a holding pattern. I've seen some of the local news media talking about how it's going to be, the Rhode Island GOP is going to be in trouble as long as it's under the Trump shadow. And I think that has almost nothing to do with it. I think it's the first priority problem of the Rhode Island GOP right now is its supporters are sitting out the fight. And as I think you were intimating, people don't really necessarily care if they're winning. They want to back people who are who are in the fight and standing up for their values. And that's the problem when you've got people with the get their little fiefdoms and they're shooting across at each other from one town committee to another or from the state to a local committee. And that's definitely a problem. But I think what it points to is a need to really go back, go local, not the publication, but actually going, you know, focusing really local. Not the General Assembly is not local as much as people say it is. It's still a statewide office in the sense that it deals with state government. And we have to build up a farm team on the right at this point, and people who really care and will, you know, brave the screams and the crowds because they're fighting for something in their own local community. And I think that's probably the direction we've got to see the state go. I mean, in Tiverton this year, I can say the local Republican committee put out actually a very firm conservative statement of values. And then for the first time since the town went nonpartisan in local elections, endorsed candidates. And those candidates won majorities of the town council and budget committee, including me. I'm not on the committee, but I'm not a Republican, but I'm on the town council.
Oh, that's right. Congratulations, by the way.
Yep. Thanks. And from what I hear, I don't have any direct inside information on this. There's been a lot of an influx of inquiries and wanting to get involved with the local Republicans. And that's because they're taking sides, they're standing up for principle, and so far staying out of each other's way, which is easier at the local level. And I think that's going to probably be the model that has to go across the state and build that up. The problem then is you get people at the state level in the state party who then see all these little local people who have their built-in following sometimes as a threat. And when they don't go along with something that people at the state level want, then that becomes a problem. But one of the bigger issues I think might face the statewide party is we haven't seen any, meaning we heard a lot of talk about who was going to be appointed by the Trump administration to this or that, and nobody. So being in the statewide party in Rhode Island among Republicans is now virtually worthless. I mean, you can get in the paper more often. Sometimes you can get some FaceTime on national TV at an endorsement celebration or that kind of thing. But there's almost nothing to it. There's no purpose to being in it. So it has to be on principle, and that's got to start from the statewide level and the local level. So it's a tough thing to figure out how to do, but hopefully not so much fresh faces, but people who have a different kind of a approach, almost more of a Tea Party grassroots philosophy rather than a partisan philosophy. More of those people will start to permeate and maybe focus locally.
I agree with you. And before I let you go, this business of it, I'm seeing some people saying, you know, the party needs a unifier and the party needs a unifier. I don't believe that, because as someone that over the years has interviewed, you absolutely 100% on the money. There are these people. They don't care. They have their little fiefdoms. They'd rather be unsuccessful because they feel they're staying true to their principles, and winning is not even their objective. They are very happy just having a small group of individuals that think the way they do, agree with what they say, and they're perfectly content with being on the losing side. They almost feel even empowered by that, as almost like in an elitist way, that if the general population agreed with them, that there's something almost wrong with that. It reminds me of when I was a college radio DJ and there were these bands that would be great and people loved them. And then as soon as they'd experienced some mainstream success, you'd these people that would suddenly hate them because of that. And there were several bands like that. The Clash, U2, they were REM. They were perfect examples of people loved those acts as long as they were not played on commercial radio and they didn't play big venues. As soon as they started getting more success, and then suddenly a lot of people started to appreciate the music, some of the early fans were like, oh, forget it, they sold out. And unfortunately, but Rhode Island does have that element. Folks, he is the managing editor of OceanStateCurrent.com. It's Justin Katz. Justin, great as always, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks, John. It's a great time.
All right. Folks, there it is. It's John DePietro. Hey, I want to remind you, on this Monday, and good afternoon once again, it is the John DePietro Show. Good afternoon to everybody on Facebook Live, brought to you by EliteWirelessRI.com. EliteWirelessRI.com. It is a different type of holiday. People are floating along. Hello, Salvador. There's Lisa. Be interesting to see the number of ballots cast for its registered voters. I agree with that. There's Cindy Nell. It needs to be investigated, without question. There's Jason Malucci, and there's Douglas. Martha Stamp.
there are only 42% of the Rhode Island taxpayers working. How can we survive? It's even less than that. It's absolutely actually less than that that are actually working, Martha Stamp. Martha Stamp, big Trillo supporter, saw that on the donation list. But anyhow, folks, hey, I want to remind you, maybe you are getting tired of whether you live in Rhode Island or Massachusetts. And good afternoon. By the way, this phone number, 766-1388, if you'd like to call in on this Monday. But if you're thinking, maybe you really are thinking, you know what, I've had it. Or maybe like a vacation home, maybe a second home. Take advantage with, and call our friend Dominic Pellini. He is originally a Rhode Islander, but he is now down in Naples, Florida, and he's the owner of Vanderbilt Realty. So he's originally from Rhode Island, so you're dealing with someone that knows your area, can kind of walk you through things. There's all different types of price point ranges. He can help you out. And Florida, I mean, think about it. Maybe it's no longer just something that you're thinking about. Maybe you'd like to put it into action. Florida, no state income tax, no automobile, town exercise tax, low utility gas, low gasoline prices. On top of that, more and more people, if you're a retiree, it's cheaper down there. Who wants to go through the next few months with winter? Not me. Nope, January temperatures as high as 74. And number of sunny days in Naples, Florida, how about 264 sunny days of the year. Great roads, little or no potholes. Florida is growing. Travel throughout the state is beautiful. Great restaurants, awesome beaches, entertainment, all everything. And Dominic, he will walk you through everything. So if you are thinking, maybe you've been thinking about it, and now you've really reached the point where you say, you know what? Now is the time. Now I am ready to make the move. Well, you have someone. I know a guy. And he's going to help you out. And he's our friend Dominic. And he's from Rhode Island. And there's one or two ways you can reach him. You can call him at 239-949-2117. 239-949-2117. Or, better yet, I think the easiest thing to do is visit his website. And it's VanderbiltFlorida.com, VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com. If you've been thinking about moving to Florida, and after this election, a lot of people are, or maybe you've just decided, you know what, I'm ready. I've been thinking about it, I'm ready. Folks, check out the website, VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com, just like Gloria Vanderbilt, VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com, and Dominic will take care of you. Again, it's Dominic Pellini. You're going to be hearing a lot about him. A lot of people say, I think I'd like to explore Florida. Well, it's going to be helpful to have someone on the ground who can help you in the Naples, Bonita Springs, Estero area. He's been there since 2005. Call Dominic today. Find out more. 239-949-2117. 239-949-2017. Or check out his website, VanderbiltRealtyFlorida.com. It's John DePietro. It is the John DePietro Show. 766-1380, 766-1380.
At Paul Massey Chevrolet, you get the lowest price guaranteed every day on our exciting lineup of Chevrolets. Paul Massey's one price plus true car equals our best price guaranteed, and it's only at Paul Massey, Rhode Island's number one Chevrolet dealer. Lease a 2019 Equinox LT all-wheel drive for $179 a month for 24 months with $2,988 due at signing.
My Paul Massey ride.
Great selection, top-notch service, and the lowest one price only at Paul Massey.
This hour of the John DePietro Show brought to you by K's 1013 Cass Ave in Woonsocket. Whether it's lunch, dinner, or a drink in the lounge, you open up the napkin, boom, there's the menu. Stop into K's 1013 Cass Ave in Woonsocket. They're right across from CVS. Lunch, dinner, drink in the lounge. They're waiting for you at K's.
Paul Massey Buick GMC South is New England's number one Buick dealer with the area's largest selection and Rhode Island's number one GMC dealer.
Get the lowest price anywhere. Paul Massey's one price plus true car equals our best price. Guaranteed. Lease a 2019 Buick Encore front-wheel drive for only $188 a month for 39 months with $1,888 due at signing.
My Paul Massey ride.
So shop Paul Massey, where every vehicle is clearly marked with our lowest one price.
Well, folks, remember, you never know when you could find yourself in an accident. There's so many bad drivers on the road. If you ever find yourself in an accident, pick up the phone and call Kenny and Patricia at West Fountain Auto Body. Call them today. They will restore your vehicle, showroom-like condition, West Fountain Auto Body. You just don't know on the roads. You don't know what can happen. But they're going to work for you, not the insurance company, West Fountain Auto Body. Call them today, 272-3340, 272-3340. Were you in an accident? Did someone hit your car? Maybe you hit someone else's car? From a small dent to a nearly totaled vehicle, you can depend on West Fountain Auto Body, 401-272-3340, located 400 West Fountain Street in Providence. It's West Fountain Auto Body. It's Kenny. It's Patricia. You know, automotive painting, refinishing, it's truly an art. They will restore your vehicle, but on top of that, they'll handle everything. There's a lot of paperwork involved in case you're in an accident. And let's face it, whenever you get behind the wheel of your vehicle, you never know if you could be in an accident. There are drunk drivers. There are people texting and driving. And maybe you could just be running a small, short errand. And then suddenly, boom, someone pulls out and there's a fender bender. But you need to get it fixed. Call West Fountain Auto Body today. 401-272-3340. Located 400 West Fountain Street in Providence. It's West Fountain Auto Body. They service all domestic and foreign vehicles. West Fountain Auto Body, 272-3340, 272-3340 for West Fountain Auto Body. And remember, with Kenny and Patricia, they're going to work for you, not the insurance company. Call West Fountain Auto Body today, 272-3340, 272-3340 for West Fountain Auto Body.
You are listening to the John DePietro Show on 99.9 FM and 1380 AM. News Talk WNRI.
All right, we're back on this Monday. Good afternoon, one and all. Here I am, Juan. We salute all veterans on this day. So important. Folks, it is the John DePietro Show weekdays. We start at 11. We go till 2. AM 1380, 99.9 FM, and it's WNRI. Well, you can call in 766-1380. You can email me, John at DePietro.com. John at DePietro.com. Some of the news over the weekend. First of all, I'm seeing that apparently now that Martha McSally, she was originally from Warwick. In the recount, they're saying that a Democrat has won the Arizona Senate race. And we're also now the first Democrat jumping in, announcing for president. First Dem in. His name is Aida, announces run for president. So Hillary, by the way, over the weekend, Hillary Clinton is saying, or there was a piece in the Washington Post, I believe, where they're predicting where they feel she will make another run. She's going to run again. Again, folks, they underestimate this president that they think he's a West Virginia lawmaker who led the teacher strikes. He's going to run for president. Richard Ojeda, O-J-E-D-A, West Virginia lawmaker who led the teacher strikes. Well, that's good. He's running for president. West Virginia state senator, retired U.S. Army major, lost his congressional bid, but saw the large swing of Trump voters towards Democrats in any district around the country. Still in a district that Trump carried by 49 points. So he is now making, he's jumping in. He's the first one then that he is jumping in. And he is the first one that is now going to run for president. Now, there's going to be a lot more. There's going to be a lot more. Whether it be Elizabeth Warren, Deval Patrick. We'll see. You know, there is talk, Governor Raimondo, she always shows up on these different lists. I think after the holidays in January into February is when you're going to see a lot of the people starting to make their moves to New Hampshire and Iowa as far as giving speeches, trying to see if there's some kind of support for them, some kind of a ground game. But the first one is in. But this Florida situation is a complete mess, and I still don't understand. Folks, why does anyone think that our elections went smooth with what we're seeing in Florida. Now, and a big story to watch locally is what's going to happen with Hasbro. We're over the weekend. It was actually on Friday. Both Mattiello and Raimondo, they've both said, as long as they stay in Rhode Island, that doesn't mean Pawtucket. 766-1380.
Good afternoon. You're next on the John DePietro Show. Hello.
Good afternoon, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Very welcome. Go right ahead.
I was calling. You're talking about the speaker's issue with the number of votes. There was 21 socialist communists.
44 to 21.
Well, if I was speaking, he has more in common with the Republicans than he does those people, because I believe the progressives are the enemy from within.
They are, no question.
And the fact is, if he brought the other 9 Republicans, you know, basically kind of helped them along, gave them access, gave them a fair hearing on bills and everything, I think that, and basically stuffed the 21 insurgents in a corner for 2 years, that could be the best thing that could happen.
You know what's sad is I would agree with you, and it's kind of like under the circumstances. I mean, that's how bad it's gotten, that under the circumstances, that's the best we could hope for. Because make no mistake about it, with him, it is still a pay-to-play atmosphere.
Well, but at the same time, too, John, don't forget that those 9 Republicans do vote for Speaker. And
yes.
And their votes do count.
Yeah, oh, no, no question about it. They absolutely do count. So
I remember when John Howard brought the Republicans in.
Yes.
It was very, very, very close. I can't remember the gentleman who ran for Speaker, but John brought the Republicans in, and that
yep.
was the difference maker.
And that could be, I don't know if it'd be, he may not need them right now, but where he would need them is to get real inside politics. In order to get a budget passed, you need 50 people to pass it. So right now, he doesn't have enough that could pass his budget, so he would have to cut a deal with the Republicans in order to try to do that. And I think it is a good thing. I had him on Friday, Blake Flippy. He's going to be the minority leader. He is, I think he's going to have far more of a successful relationship with Patricia than Patricia Morgan did.
Well, I do believe that they realize that 9 people out of 85 is not going to get much done. So therefore, he has to basically go to the powers that be, and I'm not saying beg, but, you know, be more consoling.
Something. I mean, but one thing, thank you for the call, that you're exactly right about, folks, is, you know, we call them progressives. They're actually socialists. I mean, that's really what they are. Socialism, it is on the rise. It's on the rise among young people. They don't realize the different places that they've tried it and it's failed. And there are a lot of people that and they're young, granted, but they believe, basically, they're not even Democrats. They're socialists.
He's John DePietro. He's really in the know with his talk show on your radio.
Listen, that's going to do it for this Monday. Again, we salute all veterans, past and present. It's John DePietro. Enjoy this Monday. We're back tomorrow at 11. Remember, follow me on both Facebook and Twitter at John DePietro Show, and visit the website. Find out more about the election, DePietro.com, DePietro.com. Back tomorrow at 11.
WNRI, Woonsocket.
WNRI.